This is a News Laundry podcast and you're listening to Reporters Without Orders.
Order, order. Hello and welcome to Reporters Without Orders, a podcast where we talk about what made news, what didn't, and some things that absolutely shouldn't have. I'm your host, Tanishka Sodhi, and joining me today is News Laundry's Pratyush Deep and News Minute's Nidharshana Raju. Hi, guys. Thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tanishka. How are you?
I'm good. You have been on, I think, at least like 20, 30 of our podcasts so far.
Yeah, it's been.
And it's Nidharshana's first time, and we hope to host you even more now, Nidharshana. So Pratyush has done a deep dive report this week into Himanta Biswa Sarma's journey with Pride East, a media group. And Nidharshana's story of the week, meanwhile, is about an intercaste love story in Chennai that ended in a cold-blooded caste killing. Pratyush, let's start with your story. I have been seeing you working on this for, I think, months now. I mean, at least the idea first came months ago. So tell us a little about this so-called media empire and how did it really come to become a media empire?
So basically, Himanta Biswa Sarma is quite popular nowadays, like in at least in the national level.
Yeah.
After he became the chief minister and even before when he joined BJP because of his comments and the statements that he made. So, but for the people like us who have grown up in Assam, we have seen him quite for a quite long time. And the Pride East, that the media house, which is officially owned by his wife, has been on the news for a long, long time. So, yeah, so it was, it has always been a curiosity for me to dive deep into its, you know, this organization and how they have started it. What are the, like, you know, like business, you can say, the propaganda and how they work, basically.
Right.
So this story is one of the such attempts to know more about Himanta Biswa Sarma, because I like, when I was working on the story, even though it was officially owned by his wife, the more people I speak with, the more I, you know, try to find out, dig out the details of the company. It seemed to me like if, you know, going with the journey of Himanta Biswa Sarma himself. So, yeah, so that's how.
Okay, and what is Pride East and what are the newspapers, media houses,
so
TV Pride channels East, under it?
Pride East started with a new channel called News Life. Hmm. So, I remember when I was in the school. So, Assam used to have only one news channel that is called NETV, Northeast TV. And it was owned by former Congress leader Matang Singh. So, I remember when Congress won for the second time, the new news channel came. Like, you know, this was a news for the state because Assam used to have only one channel and this is a new channel called News Live. And from the starting, we have seen how it used to work as an unofficial kind of a channel for the Congress.
Right. So it was started when Himanta was with the Congress.
With the Congress. He was a powerful cabinet minister in the Congress government.
Hmm.
So, yeah, with time when... So basically, they start with the News Live. Then they started... two more entertainment channels. Then they also bought a newspaper in 2014.
Okay.
So as of now, I think they have 4-5 channels.
Okay.
One newspaper, one news portal that we call the online Facebook kind of a thing.
Right.
So it is quite a powerful media house in Assam. It is, I think, one of the most influential.
Right.
In terms of TRP, they have always been in number one. So yeah, of course, they rule the media thing in Assam.
Your report also dives deep into allegations of Pride India being guilty of corporate fraud. Tell us more about these allegations.
So it started long back when the channel was formed. In 2008, the channel was formed. And in 2000, by the end of 2008 only, the Krishak Mukti Sangram Samiti, it is basically an organization for the peasants and the farmers.
Okay.
So the leader of it is known RTI activist Akhil Gogoi. So Akhil Gogoi and a few other activists alleged that there is this channel is doing some corporate fraud. And when we also looked into the corporate filings of the channel, then we also found, you know, there are a lot of companies based out of Calcutta, Chennai, have invested in the company in its initial years. I think they were allotted lakhs of shares. Interesting point is the company was formed in 2006, November 2006, 6 months after the Congress came to power for the second term. And since then, it has done nothing till January 2008. And meanwhile, you will see a lot of companies invested, like, you know, allotted shares into Pride is the channel. And eventually, when 2008, Riniki Bhuya Sharma became the CMD, Managing Director of the channel, till that date, the Sharma family had no shareholding in the company.
Okay.
Yeah, so they entered suddenly. Then we can see the shifting of shares to the Sharma family members and the
She entered the, there was, what was the association?
The association, like the two directors, like the first, the four directors, where one is Bhaskar Sharma, one is Atanu Bhuya, the who would become the editor-in-chief of the channel, and two others. So they three of them are still involved with the channel. Ghanshyam Talukdar is, I don't know, but I think two or three of them, the initial directors of the company, are still involved with the company. But the editor-in-chief Atanu Bhuya left the channel in 2014 or around that time. So yeah, so it was like nobody knows what the company did from 2006 November till the January 2008.
And why is that an issue?
That's not an issue. Like, it is just a point that you have formed a company and it will, after 1.5 years, it is going to be one of the biggest channel in the Northeast.
Yeah. So, and during that time when they were not doing
They were not doing anything, but at the same time, investment was going on. In 2007, you can see lakhs of shares allotted to some companies. And even allegations are there that one of the company which is based in Chennai had the same directors who were directors of the Prides. So there were allegations of corporate fraud, money laundering kind of things at that point. So the channel is controversial from the day one. And in fact, some of the initial shareholders of the company were alleged to be the associate of Himanta Biswa Sarma, some Sulfa, like the surrendered Ulfa militants, this kind of allegations were there since the beginning of the channel.
Okay. And your story also traces the intertwined journey of Himanta's News Live channel and the former chief minister of Assam, Tarun Gogoi.
So one of the interesting thing that I learned from one of the former employees is that one of the event organized by the Prideist in his initial years, Tarun Gogoi told the employees of the Prideist that it is not a normal baby, it is a caesarean baby. So he was saying ki it basically Gogoi indicated ki how the government involved in its licensing, because at that point it used to work as an unofficial spokesperson of the Congress party. You will see only positive news about the Congress and all. So but if you see by 2011-12, when Himanta Biswa Sarma was in a conflict with the Tarun Gogoi, there was dissidence among the Congress MLAs led by Himanta Biswa Sarma. So when this thing was going on, and then you will see the reporters of the News Life was in favor of the in favor of Himanta Biswa, the dissident group of the Congress. Even at that point, Digvijay Singh, he used to be the Congress General Secretary, he issued a letter to Himanta Biswa Sarma complaining about the coverage of News Life. Regarding the Congress.
Tell us government. About that event, that incident that you have written about how allegations were that News Live journalists had instigated a mob to molest.
It was a very controversial event. To 2012, what happened, one girl was molested outside a pub in Guwahati. Some people, molested her. And interestingly, the footage came on News Live about that molestation. And so News Live telecasted the video. It's after the event, the same Akhil Gogoi, the activist, he produced some other material showing the internal, the main raw footage of the event, where one can hear the reporter of the News Live was instigating the mob to do it. Ki isko wo karo, wo karo.
Seriously?
It was a very, I think it was in the national, it caught national attention for the same.
Yeah.
So when this incident happened, and Tarun Gogoi was criticized for lack of women's safety and all those things, then also News Live was cornered over its journalistic ethics. Then what happened, then there was pressure built on Himanta Biswa Sarma as well. So what happened, ki the editor-in-chief of the News Life, Atanu Bhuya, resigned from the channel, and he said ki, he's resigning because of this reason. And he was, obviously the probe was I think the CID matter was referred to CID at that time, or police, So he was saying ki, like basically the conflict between Himanta Biswa Sarma and Tarun Gogoi was also impacted the news life.
Yeah.
Because Himanta Biswa Sarma, so people told me, didn't want the Tarun Gogoi to give this as an opportunity to corner him.
Right.
So that's how it unfolded. What okay. politics and the
so,
journalism.
So we will discuss Pratyush's report in greater detail, but let's also discuss Nidharshana's report now. So her story is headlined an intercast love story in Chennai ends in cold-blooded caste killing. So just for background, it's about a 19-year-old Sharmila from Chennai who lost her husband Praveen to a caste killing on February 24th of this year. The 22-year-old man belonging to the Pariyar caste, classified as scheduled caste, was murdered by Sharmila's elder brother Dinesh and four other men, most of them caste Hindus. Nidharshana has done a deep dive report on this, and there are also videos that I have seen on News Minute where you have gone on the spot and you've been speaking to the family. The most interesting point, maybe interesting is not the right word, but the victim's family has alleged negligence despite the fact that arrests have been made, but they have said that the murder could have been prevented. Can you tell us more about that and why they think so?
Sure. So basically, both Sharmila and Praveen had eloped in October last year. And after they had eloped, they were actually hiding out for a few days. And then when they came to the police station, they say that, Sharmila's parents, including her eldest brother, who's Naresh, and her father, Duray Kumar, were at the police station. And after these initial talks wherein the police was asking Sharmila, would you like to go back to your parents? And the parents were asking her to come back to them and she denied. She said she does not want to go with her parents. She tells us that her eldest brother, Naresh, had actually threatened to kill her. He said things like, I will pay 3 lakhs to a hitman and I will come out within a year and you would not know anything. You would not find out anything. Nobody would know anything. So she was threatened that way, she says, in the police station, after which she's approached one of the police officers who she's not able to identify. But she says she went up to the police officer and said, can you please take a written complaint? I want to file a complaint because they're threatening me and there's threat to both of our lives. But she says that the police officer said it's more than enough that both you and your parents have submitted in writing that you don't have anything to do with each other and those letters would hold good. So that is what she was told, she says, and because of which she says if that complaint had maybe been taken and if the police had given her protection, then 22-year-old Praveen would actually be alive today, she believes that.
Right, so only the parents, and she had to write or give it in signing. I mean, they did not require the other family members to write. That seems like a loophole, honestly, that, can be exploited and as we see now, was exploited. And so this caste killings are, of course, predominantly reported in southern Tamil Nadu. But your story mentions that Praveen's murder is said to be one of the first cases of caste killings in Chennai in recent times. Can you tell us more about that and what the data says?
Sure. So as you mentioned, we hear about caste killing a lot from southern Tamil Nadu, especially from Tirunelveli and Thoothukudi, because these are two districts where activists who are working towards Dalit rights have been asking continuously for these districts to be declared as, caste atrocity prone districts. So we don't really hear a lot about caste killings from Chennai, and that is also backed with data from the National Crime Records Bureau. Like the NCRB says that in the years 2017, 2019 and 2022, there have not been any records of caste killing. But also the catch here is that we don't have records for 2020, 2021, the two COVID years, and we don't have records of 2023. But when I was on the ground, when I was speaking to Tinda Meoripa, which is Untouchability Eradication Front, and other caste annihilation groups who work in Chennai, who've been working in Chennai extensively in the last 20 years, many of them tell me that they've actually never heard of a caste crime having happened in Chennai. They usually travel outside of Chennai to go, to report from the ground, to record the caste killings, to take, bites from the victims and all of that. They maintain a record, and there is no record of a caste killing from Chennai is what they tell us too. But and also for the years before 2017, there is no data that is available from the NCRB, which is why we don't know.
Okay. But do a lot of caste killings, do they sometimes go unreported or do they get classified into other categories? Is that something that happens?
I'm sure there are a lot of caste crimes that happen against the Dalit community, right. But you know, they don't go up to the extent of murder. I think that's the only
difference
contention here.
Yeah, and why has this particular crime shaken up the local community a lot? I mean, like your report detailed on that. Can you tell us?
So, like I said, we've never really heard of caste killing, and that too. This was a very gory, very brutal murder that has taken place, and it's happened right on a main road where you know, there are a lot of it's a place where you know, one of the places where you can see the nightlife of Chennai as such.
What area is this?
Yeah, it's happened in Pallikarnai. It's okay. A locality in Chennai.
Okay.
So that's where that's where both of them have been born and brought up as well, both Praveen and Sharmila. So it's happened outside this private bar in Chennai, not exactly close to the private bar. The incident has happened around 100 meters away from right. The private bar, but that is the location where it has happened. And that is actually what has startled a lot of people, because these are places where a lot of people are always present. The roads are always busy.
Yeah.
And to know that something like this has happened around 9:30 in the evening is quite scary. And to know that the way he was murdered, the way he was brutally murdered with sickles and knives, and you know, it was very gory. The details of the crime are very gory. And that is actually one of the main reasons why this is actually shook up the entire city.
Of course. And was Sharmila present with him at the time, or was he alone at the time?
No, he was actually alone at the time. There was actually an elaborate plan that was sketched out by the five men who have been arrested by the police. So how that transpired is that they have been trying to get him. So after the marriage, after Praveen and Sharmila got married, they actually were staying in different parts of the city. They were hiding out. They did not want to come back home because they knew that such threats were already given out to their families as well. So Praveen and Sharmila were first hiding out in a place called Mahindra City, then in Nedungundram. And when they were residing in Nedungundram, one of Dinesh's friends — Dinesh is one of the accused, he's the second brother of Sharmila — one of his friends called him up and said, you know, you are hiding like a little girl, you should come back, you don't have it in you to come back and live where you actually should be living, you know, such constantly, over repeatedly he was being called, he was being harassed by these people. And then he decides to come back. And after he comes back, also there's an elaborate plan. They planted one of their friends in Praveen's group. They made sure that he isolated Praveen from every other friend of his. This has happened over a span of 2 to 3 months. And then they finally called him to the spot on the day, that is on February 24th, and they executed the murder.
Oh God, this is really very bone-chilling. Yeah. Can you also tell us about Sharmila and Praveen earlier years? How did they meet? How did they decide to go ahead with the marriage despite objections?
So Praveen and Sharmila have known each other since Sharmila was 10. So they've known each other because they live in the same locality.
Right.
The Sharmila's house is like 2 kilometers away from Praveen. So they often walk together, and the both of them also studied in the same school for 2 years. So they've known each other from a very young age. And I think their relationship started at the age of when Praveen was, 13, 14 years old. That is when their relationship is said to have started. But in between, somewhere around 2018, 2019, when the parents of both Sharmila and Praveen found out, they warned them. They said that, you know, you should not get involved in a relationship, you should not get involved with each other at this age, you know, you're very young and all of that. So they actually — Sharmila tells me that she wasn't talking to Praveen for a year or two. That was between 2018, 2019. She was not talking to him at all. But eventually they came back, they started talking after she finished school. They again got back in touch, and they got back into a relationship, and they were together. And when the parents found out last year, Sharmila's parents, when they found out last year, they started looking for other bridegrooms. They wanted to have her married off to somebody else because they did not want her to get married to Praveen. So that is actually the reason why that actually forced the two of them to elope and get married, because they were very afraid that she would be married off to somebody else.
Right. And are there shelter homes in Chennai for intercaste marriages, couples who, safe homes actually, which I think is something that happens in some parts of the country, but I'm not sure if it's implemented everywhere.
I'm not sure, actually. I would have to check.
Okay.
It's actually quite a good point that you've brought up, but I've not actually heard of them, any of them in
right.
Chennai, because even when the scheduled caste, the National Commission for Scheduled Caste,
right, regional director, had come, yeah.
They had also suggested that, you know, practically it's impossible to prevent such crimes, and it's quite shocking that, you know, something like this has happened in Chennai. And even they were suggesting that they should have been hiding out a bit longer. They should not have, if they had not fallen prey to such calls, they would have actually been safe today.
Right, that is the point I wanted to come to, where the National Commission for Scheduled Castes, the regional director, told Praveen's family that they should have been more cautious. In what context did he mean that? And just, it's a little jarring to hear that in such a time.
Yes, it was very jarring for me as well. It was actually the first thing that he uttered when he got out of the car and the first thing that he told the family. Although it came from a place of, a very practical, I think it is a very practical solution. Like, there's absolutely nothing we are able to do. We're not able to stop such crimes. So maybe you could have been careful. Maybe that's how he meant it. But it felt extremely insensitive because it's the first thing that he said the minute he got out. And it actually, for me, it amounted to victim blaming. But the parents didn't think that. They thought that he was being practical, he was being logical. So they, did not. But yeah, I definitely thought that it was victim blaming the minute they got out of that car. That's the first thing they told the parents.
And has Praveen's family, were they supportive of the marriage, of their relationship throughout? Or what was the situation there?
Yes, actually, it was Praveen's parents who've been supportive of the marriage. Okay. They were the people who were hiding both Praveen and Sharmila at their relatives' house. Okay. Across Chennai over different periods of times. And even now, it's actually the parents who are paying her fees, because Sharmila is only 19 and she's now in her final year of her undergraduation. So her parents are, Praveen's parents are actually paying for her education, and they're making sure that she's not discontinuing her education.
And Nidarshana, you know, the photos on the News Laundry and News Minute stories that you have clicked, the descriptions of the, you know, just how Sharmila was wearing his shirt, clinging to the casket. I mean, they're very elaborate and very descriptive. And I can't imagine what it was like for you to be there making notes of these things and reporting on it. Can you tell us about your experience on reporting on this? And for how long were you on ground? And how did you manage to really file consecutive detailed reports on this?
Right. So I actually went to their house the day I found out, that is on Sunday. It was a Sunday when we heard of the murder. It was actually very, very heartbreaking to be there. It was extremely difficult to even approach the family, of course. And there was no way we could even approach the family or talk to them. They were in no state to talk. They were absolutely devastated. And it broke my heart to actually be there every day to see them, you know, going through this process of grief. And it felt very personal as well in many places when I saw, you know, so many of his friends, young girls, young, children coming, who apparently he plays with young children every day outside. He plays hide and seek with all the neighboring kids, and all of them were crying their hearts out. It was absolutely, it was heartbreaking. That's all it was. And it was very difficult to even speak to them. I had to give them a lot of time. I had to make sure that they were okay with talking about this to media. It was quite the process, but also a very heartbreaking process at that.
You think, has it been given enough coverage as a news story? Is it being covered ethically? Because I know in Northern India, whenever things like this happen, if it does get covered, it's covered in a, the slant is very visible, you know. It's not really covered in a way that does justice to all the castes and all the families and the victim, of course. So wanted to understand what the situation is like down south.
I think they have covered it, but they haven't been persistent is what is my observation at that. Because I did not see people coming every day. I did not see people giving, that again comes down to sensitivity as well. They did not really give the family any time to process what had happened to them. They obviously were waiting to just get their bites and get footages of, the family members and that of the, the funeral procession. It was very difficult actually to see that they were not pursuing it, giving them time actually to pursue the story itself. Yeah. That was one of the things that I noticed. But I think that they covered the story nevertheless, because this is one of the first caste crimes in Chennai, at least in recent times. So it certainly did get a lot of media attention, but not very sensitive. The reportage was not very sensitive, especially by vernacular media houses.
Okay. Yeah, I think at times like this, there's always a danger of sensationalizing the incident and not really covering it in a structural manner, right? So
yes.
I think that's when independent media like News Minute, News Laundry can be trusted to do a sensitive job. And this was not meant to be a plug, but on that note, you know, do subscribe to News Laundry and News Minute to help us continue to do such reports. You know, going every day on the ground is not easy. And now you can also subscribe to us together with the joint subscription. I feel really amused at how this has become a subscription plug, because I swear it was not meant to be, but it is. We
it's
also
a good thing, by the way.
So Sharmila's family is still claiming that this is not a caste killing. Can you tell us about that?
So according to Sharmila's parents, this was not a caste killing. They have this elaborate story, which is also inconsistent in many places, because their version to me was very different from their version to other media houses, right? So what they claim is that they are not, you know, they don't believe in caste. They don't have a problem with caste. It was actually Praveen as an individual that they had a problem with, because as it's there in my story as well, Praveen actually has a 302, section 302 attempt murder charges against him. So they believe that because he's a history cheater, although there's only one or two cases against him, they believe that he's a history cheater and he's not a good influence on Sharmila. They claim that that is actually the reason why they did not approve of their relationship. And they have also maintained that, you know, they actually have also maintained that it was not them, it was their son is not casteist, and that their son, the second son, who's Dinesh, who was actually one of the accused in the crime, is in a relationship with an SC girl, with a Dalit woman, and that they approve of that relationship. So these are the reasons that they have been giving, but it has largely been inconsistent because they have said very different stories to other media houses. They told me that Dinesh called them at 9 o'clock and they knew of the incident having taken place. He cried to them on the call and then, you know, abruptly cut the call and then they couldn't reach him. But they told other media houses that we did not know that such and such things had happened and that we only found out when the police told us the next morning. So there are a lot of such inconsistencies in what they have been claiming. So. But yeah, this is what they maintain. They maintain that they are not casteist and that they have not indulged in, that their son didn't have anything to do with this.
Right. And the four accused who have been arrested, did they all confess immediately? And did they admit to this being a caste-related crime? Or what was their reason, in their words, for the crime?
So two of the accused have actually said that they are friends of the guy who was murdered, the charges that Praveen has against him. So two of them say that they belong to the other, gang, and that they showed up here. None of them have actually admitted to the whole murder having been their idea, but their CCTV footage to show that these are the people who've been involved in the killing, to show that these are the people who murdered Praveen. And Dinesh's story is completely different. He says that he was just called there. According to the police, Dinesh told the police that he just happened to be there and he was not carrying any weapons. But we don't have complete information from the police. They've not completely disclosed what each and every person's statements were. And they're saying that they're still investigating this from all angles and that we'll find out shortly.
Okay. And Nidarshana, is there anything else you'd like to add about the story, or if you can tell us more about Sharmila and Praveen, who they were and are as individuals, that would be great.
Sure. I don't know who Praveen was as an individual because I never got to interact with him. Sadly, it was very heartbreaking to learn of his death and to be there throughout the funeral. But what I gathered from Sharmila was that she's a very brave woman. She's 19. She's so brave. She's been able to. She's actually standing up against her parents, despite knowing that her parents actually have some sort of political backing. That is something that is also there in my copy. She says that her father belongs to the DMK and that he's there in the construction wing in Sholinganallur. And when I went to their house as well, I spotted these, you know, pictures with MPs and with a lot of famous politicians that her father has had clicked over the years. So I think that she's very brave to actually be taking on her parents the way she is, despite knowing that she's actually helpless. She doesn't have any support. She doesn't have any, you know, backing. It's just Praveen's parents and his family who is taking care of her. But she's actually very strongly taking up against, she's going against her parents.
And I mean, at 19 to do that is really, really not easy at all. So she's staying with Praveen's family right now.
Yes, she is with Praveen's family right now.
Okay, okay, sure. Thank you so much, Nadarshna. We do have a last segment to that we'll need you to contribute to. But before that, I just want to come back to Pratyush's story because I still had some questions, such as tell us about Riniki Bhuyan Sharma's involvement in Pride India, because I know you initially thought of the story as looking at her media empire. And like you said, as you reported, you realized, Himanshu, Anta's contributions were perhaps far more. So tell us about her involvement, how she got involved, what role she plays in all the different, channels and newspapers.
Like, if you see the official papers or if you see from the official line of the channel, she looks after the management. And she was the CMD, I think, from January 2008 onwards until now. So, to say, like, when I spoke to the employees of the channel and who was involved with the channel since the beginning, they told me one thing ki, it was Himanta Biswa Sarma who is actually the brain behind the channel. So they told me ki how Himanta used to visit the employees when they were undergoing training under some media group in Delhi, like in Guwahati only, right. They were called from Delhi, some media guru or some groups. So they were given detailed training how to do television media, because most of them were from the newspapers. So they were undergoing 3 months long training, and Himanta used to visit them at night. And Himanta used to in initial years, he was quite involved with the channel.
And now?
Now they were telling he's quite busy, so he doesn't look after the things. I think now Riniki Bhuyan Sarma plays bigger role than the earlier. But people are very hesitant to speak exact things about the, the role played by the husband and wife. Because I got to know from the employees that when Himanta Biswa Sarma had resigned from the ministry, he didn't hold any portfolio in the Congress government. At that time, and it was the peak of his conflict with the Tarun Gogoi, the chief minister. So at that point, he used to visit the channel regularly in the evening.
Okay.
He used to sit with the editor in chief. That's what the gossips these employees told me. So in that way, it seems like he was quite involved till he joined BJP.
Right.
But later on, maybe he was quite occupied to look after the minor things.
Right.
But still, people say it was Himanta Biswa Sarma who actually take the final call.
Yeah, and you also spoke to the former editor-in-chief of the channel, Bhuyan, who told you that the channel was independent of Sharma's influence. Tell us more about that and whether you think that statement is factually correct.
It is a self-contradictory statement. At the same time, he was telling me it is quite independent, they never tell you to do anything. But at the same time, he is telling me Sarma didn't need to tell him anything because he all understands what Sarma is thinking.
We already know what he wants us to
And he also telling me ki if you meet Himanta, then he will never ask you to do a story, but he will give you information and then you have to learn ki what is the news. So these things, and he was also telling me ki Himanta Biswa Sarma is the best editor in chief. So these statements are self-contradictory. Maybe I think there is inconsistency.
Did he agree to speak to you easily?
Yeah.
Okay.
There's no problem in the regional media because people are quite friendly.
Yes.
And to be honest, one thing that I learned while speaking to a lot of editors in Assam, especially the regional media who are heading channels there, they are not like what we see in the national media. A media scenario is quite balanced. I'm not saying it is it is totally fine or independent. It is there. The problems are there. Even now, I'm also working on a story where you would see one incident by the convoy of a minister was not published or not reported for 2 days.
Okay.
So it was incident happened in the on March 3rd, and it was reported in last Wednesday only. That too after a political party addressed a press conference. And social media also took up the issue.
Okay.
Then only the mainstream media take it up. So these issues are there. But more or less, if we compare with the national media and what we see in the mainstream channels like Zee News or any Aztag and all those, it is not that bad in the regional media. They are quite free. And I spoke to 2-3 editors and they are quite friendly. They were telling me a lot of things.
But I just want to ask you, when Himanta shifted from Congress to BJP, how did the slant of his channels and newspapers change? I mean, was it like an overnight? Because like you said, the propaganda was visible, you know, very pro-Congress. How did that become very pro-BJP?
They
I mean, was it subtle
like
or was it like...
Basically, you have to see, like the, what I get from this reporter is that the management doesn't work in terms of ideology. They work in terms of politics of Hemanta Biswa Sarma. So if like we should not mistake it for like, you know, they will propagate Hinduism and all those. For example, I have cited one example. When Ram Mandir was, Pran Pratistha was going on in Delhi, the newspaper didn't carry like, you know, Ram Mandir as the main focus. You, if you see the front page, you will see Hemanta Biswa Sarma's two pictures there. The point, so the, it is more about the person rather than the ideology he
of course but when the person is shifting from such drastic like Congress to BJP so it changes overnight, right? The
coverage. it will, they profess what Hemanta says,
right?
So next day headline would be like Hemanta said this, so it is his mouthpiece,
but
don't mistake it,
just,
it is for BJP,
of course. But is it just you know, the stories about him but also other stories that you know he may have some sort of stakehold in, whether it's cabinet decisions or so everything has that slant.
Everything has his version. Like, interestingly, he had the, and the newspaper carries his photo every day, at least two. One day, I have cited this example in the story. On January 4th, there was an accident, very tragic accident happened in Assam where 12 people had died. So that day, all newspapers carries this as the main headline.
Right.
No, if 12 people had died in an accident, and it was a big story there. So if you look at their newspaper, what you will see, just before, above the headline, they have put in news items talking about the launching of a book where about like COVID-19, how Hemanta Biswa Sarma defeat the COVID in Assam. So they just, that's how they work. You just have to think it as a propaganda for Hemanta Biswa Sarma, not for BJP. And if BJP is there, then it's fine.
But the main focus,
is on the Hemanta Biswa Sarma.
Got Very interesting. We'll get to the last part of our podcast now, where Pratyush and Nidharshana will give us recommendations. So Pratyush, let's start with you since you are a seasoned recommender.
So the book that I'm going to recommend is the book called Ulfa, The Mirrors of Dawn. It is written by Rajiv Bhattacharya. So it's a very interesting book. Like it has a lot of details, unknown stories about the insurgency in Assam.
Oh, wow.
So in Northeast specifically,
right.
You know, what is the role of you know, ISI, what is the role of Bangladesh intelligence. So it is a very fascinating story. And if you want, if you were interested in the Southeast Asia politics and you know, the this insurgencies in Northeast, one should read this book. And it has very details and many unknown chapters of the dark history of Assam, like the killing of a journalist called Parag Kumar Das, who killed it and how it was linked to the killing of a MP in Nepal. So, like, Chota Rajans is also, like, you know, in the narrative there.
Get the book tomorrow. I'll borrow it.
yeah, definitely.
And recommend it a month later.
It has a lot of stories that I think as a journalist, one should read if one if somebody is interested to cover our Northeast or have some interest in this, to know about this part of the country.
For sure. Nidharshana, what about you? What would you like to recommend?
Yes, I would like to recommend this story that Aparna Karthikeyan has written for People's Archive of Rural India, that is Pari. So it's actually in Tamil, but there is a translation in English. In Tamil, it's titled Kaindha Karuvattu Thozhilin Eeramana Pakkangal. It basically translates to the wet world of dry fish. I know it sounds very different in English, but yeah, it's very beautiful. It's actually a documentation of how there's an entire woman force in Thoothukudi, like a woman-filled workforce in Thoothukudi who work in the business, who are in the business of dry fish. It documents everything from their, you know, their little folk songs to how, you know, skillfully they cut the fish and how, you know, they're struggling with climate crisis, with problems like overfishing and how they are coming up with, you know, ways to cope with that, their financial stress and everything. I think it's a very beautifully documented, very well documented piece that everybody should read.
And if it's Pari, I'm sure it has a lot of great photos to accompany
the
text.
Parini Kumar, very beautiful.
It's very interesting. Pari is a very good, like, you know, site. I read their stories, like in the long format stories.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
And even the way they sort of adapt to digital media and you know, the long forms.
They have a segment on the
faces.
Faces. They click photos of different communities and, like, you know, it's very interesting
Correct.
Thing.
This is our way
and
of...
He also reminds me of this photo essay thing that they've done with, sex workers. It was a very well-documented.
Yeah.
Like, you can't make out who they are, but the picture is so powerful. It's also very, very beautifully documented.
Okay. I hope P. Sainath is watching.
Yeah. People should look for Pari. It is a good site.
I would like to recommend a story by Joanna Deeksha on Scroll called India's iPhone Factory is Keeping Women Workers Isolated. It's about how women workers are housed in hostels that restrict their movement. And this is keeping a lid on their working conditions. It's part of Scroll's Common Ground series, which I absolutely love. And I just wait for all their stories. They're great deep dives with... that are written with very good perspectives, and would definitely recommend this story. And of course, Pratyush's story and Nidarshana's story, which will be linked to the description of this video. And Pratyush was in Assam reporting on this. Nidarshana was reporting on this from Chennai. So it takes time and resources for us reporters to go on ground and get you these stories. And we can only do this with your support. So do support News Laundry and News Minute. The general elections are also just around the corner, and we have a joint subscription because we'll be covering this together. So do support us and help us bring you more powerful stories. And with that, this podcast is adjourned.
News Laundry is possible because of our paying subscribers. We don't run on corporate or government ads. You too can be part of changing the news model. Go to newslaundry.com/subscription. Be a part of the community that pays to keep news independent. For the smoothest News Laundry experience, download our app, watch our shows, listen to our podcasts, read our reports, stay informed, pay for news, protect democracy, save the world.